Richard Nixon, Studebaker, television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe. Rosenberg, H-bomb, Sugar Ray, Panmunjom, Randall, the King and I, and the Catcher in the Rye. Eisenhower vaccine, England's got a new queen, Marciano, Liberace, Santayana, goodbye.
We didn't start the fire, it was always burning since the world's been turning. We didn't start the fire, no, we didn't light it, but we tried to fight it.
Joseph Stalin, Alan Carr, Nasser and Prokofiev, Rockefeller, Campanella, communist bloc. Roy Cohn, one for all.
Welcome, all you hotheads, even those of you who aren't big fans of Billy Joel, to Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the July 22nd, 2001 edition. Oh boy, 6 years of endless babble on the radio, and where are we at? That's a good question, but babble on we do here in Babylon, and I'm your host, Bathrop Spear Babbler Robert Norse, and this is your free radio station, so use it while you can before the FCC comes and drags us away. Actually, there's no immediate indications that that's in the offing as far as I've heard, though the V-Man should be on at 1:30 to give you updates on that situation if he hasn't already. I don't keep too current with what the V-Man's been up to, but I know that he is the expert on free radio across the country as far as I'm concerned, and particularly in the Santa Cruz area. So do stay tuned after our show ends at 1:30 for the update from the V-Man, who will give you the latest on where we're at, free radio-wise. This show concerns itself, as all you regular listeners know, with civil rights and folks outside. And I wish I could report that on the upcoming City Council agenda, which is packed and huge for Tuesday, since City Council goes away for a month in August, on vacation, don't you know, perhaps camping, you never can tell, without, of course, dealing with any of the long-standing issues like rent control, homelessness in terms of the emergency shelter for homeless people, or at least the right to shelter themselves, civil rights for homeless people, community control of police, action on the tidelands, and the usual giveaways to Charlie Canfield. I consider the 2 years that he continues to have occupied tidelands property giveaway there, that his boardwalk is sitting on public land with the city attorney twiddling his thumbs, and the hired attorney, I guess city council hired an alternate counsel, also twiddling his thumbs. It seems clear that the, what are we going to call it, the Porter Council, the Riley Council, the, I guess it's the Fitzmaurice Council, or Fuhrer Fitzmaurice's Council, as he hates to hear me say, because he regards that as indecorous to refer to him in that fashion, even after he represses speech in a fashion quite reminiscent of, Chancellor Hitler in the 30s, and other strong-armed leaders who don't allow meaningful public comment. I think his violations of the Brown Act, and I'd like to apologize publicly on the air, should have been brought before the grand jury. I was on the internet today looking up the agenda, which, as I said, is huge for the July 24th Tuesday City Council meeting, and I noted that Fitzmaurice is going to make a reply to the grand jury's recommendations. It has some minor recommendations about the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Rubber Stamping Board, also known as the Citizens Police Review Board. That's the city council cover-up organ that keeps Chief Belcher's the shine on his badge and the spring in his step, although, of course, the police department says it doesn't like the Citizens Police Review Board because they'd rather have nothing there at all, although actually it serves a very useful function in making like there's some kind of review process when there isn't. Anyway, this grand jury report should have in it a response to concerns about the Brown Act violations of the city council under Sugar and Fitzmaurice, by the which, as well as under Byers, but Sugar and Fitzmaurice particularly egregious on this issue. Brown Act, as those of you who are regular listeners know, is the law that requires city meetings, all public meetings, to be open, requires citizens to be able to have access to them and to be informed as to what is going on in them by prior agendas. It prohibits city council members from meeting privately in secret in order to arrange things beforehand without public debate and discussion, or in closed sessions discuss matters that should be discussed in open session, which I think, of course, has been the case all along with the Dolphin Lee project. And, of course, I don't have a listening device into the closed session, but I know that the matter has been discussed endlessly in the closed session, the purchase of the Lee property, which apparently is finally going to happen. That's the Lee Apartments, the final third of the Lee Apartments, Dolphin Apartments, and Rex Court Apartments, which will form the Dolphin Lee Project. That's Mercy Charities Housing's deformed baby that is going to be, it's going to be our multi-million dollar baby, taking up 5 to 17 years of affordable housing money, depending on whether you take the redevelopment stats or Mark Premax stats. Lots of money for less housing than currently exists for low-income people. Better housing for a few, yes, but less housing generally, and a complete waste of money to a special interest group, Mercy Charities Housing, when it could be going to other concerns. Particularly other, we've suggested vacant property on which housing could be built. There could be eminent domain, there could have been seizure of the and purchase of the Canfield Seaside Company vacant lots next to the Dolphin and Lee, where the actual project could have been built if they really wanted to do it that way, if they wanted to save money, if they wanted to confront the great master, Charles Canfield, who apparently they don't want to confront, and don't want to give straight answers about it. Instead, they line up their organizations. Some of them, of course, broke line. Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has all along supported this boondoggle project. And essentially, I don't think it's ever heard the other side on these issues. There's never been a real debate in the community except when some of us, as critics, organized a debate, and then Mercy Charities Housing and city council members wouldn't show. So it was clear that they want to make these decisions in closed sessions behind closed doors so that the, 15 million dollars that's now going for this project is expeditiously and quickly spent on a group of favored housing providers, the monopoly housing providers, in fact, Mercy Charities Housing. There was no bidding. There was no discussion of alternatives. The first time that actually hit the city council was through the mouth of Mark Premack. This is the council member who won't call you back no matter how many times you call him, because he knows better, you know. He knows what you're going to say, and he doesn't feel he has to listen to you or talk to you. At least that's how he treats me. But he had some intelligent things to say and some intelligent questions to raise on the issue of the Dolphin and Lee. And indeed, when he didn't get answers, he still proceeded to go right ahead and vote for the replacement housing plan at the last council session. And I suspect he'll probably vote for the acquisition of the Lee property, which is coming up on Tuesday. And a little bit about that. You'll forgive the studio noises. The Lee property is being purchased. It's all on the consent agenda. So unless an individual like myself is at the meeting and pulls it off, it'll go through without any discussion. But, of course, that's up to you. If you're there, you can pull it off the agenda. The specific price for the property is going to be about $1.3 million for the Lee apartments. And the Lee apartments, I'll remind you, were the people of the Lee apartments who refused the deal last year and said, we want guarantees that every person who lives here will be able to get back in here. And that they also asked that there be more housing than currently exists, and that also that Mercy Charities housing not be involved and that other people be found. And, of course, City Council didn't even discuss this as a serious petition concern from what's called Residentes Unidos, the group that was doing this last year, but simply rammed it through. First thing it did was they cut the Lee off from the deal as like the poor sisters or the poor orphan children or the idiot child, and they went ahead and they did a separate deal with the Dolphin apartment owner, Terry McElroy, and purchased the abandoned and decrepit Rex Court property, even though it could have been rehabilitated and there was no study done that showed it couldn't be, and demolished the Rex Court very quickly around the time of right before Christmas, and actually the order passed before the new council was even voted in. It was a quick deal, a quick sleight of hand, and now the Lee property is going to be joined to that situation. And as I said, it's a huge waste of public money in terms of the amount of affordable housing could be gotten, in terms of really providing guarantees that those who are there will get back. They've refused to do that because what they want to do is they want to kind of wait for people to leave as the project is delayed. They're not delaying the project. Frankly, the critics are trying, like myself, are trying to delay the project so we can have a real project that provides more affordable housing and protects the affordable housing that currently exists. But, of course, we're few and far between. We're considered pariahs and bad boys. And we are very intentionally ignored and given less time to speak on issues than other people. That was another violation of the Brown Act that happened. Again, getting back to the grand jury report on the Brown Act, the grand jury apparently reported within the last month, and it's on the Internet. I haven't read it yet. I just kind of rushed to the Internet this morning. I don't usually have access as I've been kind of moving from place to place, but I may have access in the weeks ahead, and I think I will have access, in fact, and I'll be able to do a little bit more research. But I'm apologizing because the grand jury report doesn't have anything on, I assume, because it was never brought to their attention, the matter of Brown Act violations, where the mayor directed individuals like myself to leave the room, where the mayor switched items around, held votes on items before that had not even been properly announced to the public, where closed meetings were held, most notably and regularly, of the Mercy Charities Housing Advisory Board, which was funded by the City Council. It included a voting City Council member, Mayor Sugar. It was clearly covered by the Brown Act, and they refused to follow the Brown Act, even though it was suggested by the City Council that maybe Gasharuni, the people that they're giving all the money to, the Mercy Charities housing folks, would follow the Brown Act and let the public into these meetings. And if the public is disruptive, of course, the public can be told to settle down and shut up or, you know, leave. And those are legitimate things for a presiding officer to say. What is not legitimate is for an individual to use that in a selective fashion, as Mayor Fitzmaurice and Mayor Sugar have, and also to do so in a setup where individuals are not having adequate time to speak to matters of public importance, particularly when Fitzmaurice, Sugar, and others were brought to power on a commitment to provide more public access. What we're getting, of course, is less public access, or perhaps the same restricted access as we had under the Rotkin-Kennedy days at Santa Cruz City Council. Anyway, that's the bad news from some of the bad news. I don't want to say that's all the bad news. Hey, here on Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and we don't have just have bad news. We have some good news too. I'm hoping on next Thursday to bring you an interview with Peter Marin and Glenn Maurer of Santa Barbara. While Santa Cruz is sitting on its complacent, I should say the Santa Cruz City Council members have all their buns squarely placed on their seats, and they're not sure where their eyes are turned, but they're certainly not acting to deal with homeless civil rights issues or homeless shelter issues. Though the police department, of course, gets everything it wants and more, and it looks like the Santa Cruz County Visitors Convention Center, the Chamber of Commerce deal where we get to pay the advertising of we get to pay Charlie Canfield to advertise the city, right, to advertise for his beach boardwalk for the city to bring in business. They're going to get $400,000, even though at the last council meeting I apparently sufficiently embarrassed Crone and Sugar to pull the item off the agenda so they could at least think about it again. Maybe they're going to try to propose something else, but the resolution coming up is the same one of an increase of $30,000 and money for this, making it about $400,000, and then they're spending a huge. This is a project that essentially provides ads for the Seaside Company and to a lesser extent some other businesses, but mostly, or at least half of those ads, as I understand it, are for the Seaside Company. I could be wrong about this. This is what I've heard from critical council members like Crone when he was standing up on the issue. But, for example, on the same agenda, we have like $3,500 going for a waiver of police fees for the farmers market, which is a pittance. And I'm glad that they are waiving the police fees, and I'm hoping that the farmers market is going to adopt the stance that it's had usually in the last 5 or 6 years, although it's gotten repressive at different times, where they don't go after hippies on the sidewalk. They don't ask the police to patrol for unlicensed vendors, that is to say people who are showing their hemp jewelry off to the side for donation, where they don't go after drummers and musicians. All this has been happening in the last month and a half under the wise and able leadership of Janet of the Farmers Market and Sergeant Butchie Baker. You know him, with Sticky Fingers Butchie from 1992 fame, the case of the 9 or 10 women who accused him of sexually molesting them in searches, improper behavior, 9 separate women charging this, producing a public scandal, which the police quickly covered up. They promoted Baker to sergeant, declared him officer of the year, and city manager for life, Dick Wilson, called off the investigation 2 weeks after it had started, and that the city council, this was before the days of the fig leaf citizens police review or rah-rah rubber stamping board. Anyway, the farmers market is only getting $3,500 in terms of waivers, but you get these huge amounts of money that go for business and police concerns, and also for construction for city offices. There's a whole bunch of items on the agenda. I'm going to go through some of them. You should first notice, those of you who are interested in city council in the summer, and it gets pretty tedious, but it's happening. They've changed the schedule of the Tuesday, July 24th City Council meeting. 9:30 a.m. is when the closed litigation session is, and that is a session where there is an open interval. You can go and speak there. It isn't held in the council chambers. It's held in the city manager's conference room, which is in the mayor's offices area, which is right next to the council chambers. Then at 11 a.m., the redevelopment agency business happens. Usually that's at 5, so they're shifting that around, no doubt to help all those working people on Tuesday who want to attend, particularly from the Dolphin and Lee projects who will be affected by this. That item, there are 3 items there that essentially complete the sellout of the people in the beach flats in terms of the Lee apartments. There's an agreement for the purchase and sale of the Lee property at 124-126 LeBrant Street, item 2. Item 3 is approval of the property management agreement with Mercy Charities Housing. They get to take over. And 4 is a voluntary alternative relocation policy for the Lee people. And I actually wrote those up, but in my rush to get here, I didn't print them out. They are available at the library, which I believe is open from 12 to 4 today, possibly with extended hours. You can also get a copy of this agenda from the city clerk on Monday. That's downtown, if you want to look it over, and the documents are there. As I said, it's about $1.3 million, and there's a very limited amount of relocation money that's being appropriated. I think it's $250,000. which is seems to me utterly ridiculous. I could be wrong. I could be remembering the wrong figure, but I think we figured out it would take millions and millions of dollars to provide 43 months of relocation at the current rents for the 150 people who are in the Dolphin and Lee. I'm sorry, the 150 people who are supposedly in the Dolphin, the 60-odd people who are in the Lee, and actually we think that there's significantly more than that that are living there that will have to leave because their affordable housing is being destroyed by the Redevelopment Agency, which has a sweetheart relationship with Mercy Charities Housing. Elizabeth Vogel and Seal Cirillo are thick as thieves, and I think thieves here is the operative word. Housing is being stolen from low-income people. For those of you who want to raise questions about it, call Fuhrer Fitzmaurice at 420-5017, or Mayor Fitzmaurice, if you will, or Tiny Tim, as he likes to portray himself in his aw shucks, aw gee manner, except when he's directing people to leave city council member, city council offices or city council chambers, and refusing to put items on the agenda like the sleeping ban modifications that Ed Porter tried to have put on this spring, and Fitzmaurice refused to allow on his agenda. This is supposed to be kind of a cooperative rotating mayor system, but Fitzmaurice, I think, I quite aptly call Fuhrer Fitzmaurice, and I will be discussing that at Oral Communications on Tuesday if I make my way there. I'm becoming increasingly disillusioned with city council. I speak to essentially a bunch of staff members and council members who aren't listening, and, of course, the public on the television, which is the only redeeming feature of talking to city council. And what we really need to do, of course, is establish alternate organs of government, meaning alternate forums where we really bring up, discuss, and act on issues, and then get city council to catch up with us. But that can't be done by one person. It has to be done by a community or by at least a group of people. It could be a small group, but it has to start that way. And it isn't happening yet. And I hope it does happen in terms of issues like the police, in terms of issues like low-income housing, rent control, homeless civil rights. Certainly there's a lot of people who are concerned and know about Camp Paradise. It's actually made its way twice into the comic news supplement. Favorable and informative reviews of what's going on at Camp Paradise. And indeed, that kind of discussion has had its impact. City Council, though it continues to say Camp Paradise has to go when you talk to individual council members like Crone or Fitzmaurice or even Porter, you still get the city manager has not directed the police to proceed and remove it, much as the city manager likes to say, or I should say the deputy police chief Locke liked to say, I haven't heard from him recently, but several weeks ago he was quoted as saying that there's going to be a move on Camp Paradise whenever they feel like it because it's illegal, it violates the camping ordinance, which it does. Any attempt to shelter yourself outside in Santa Cruz violates the camping ordinance. Any attempt to sleep in any vehicle anywhere in the city that is not on a business parking lot, no more than two vehicles, a church parking lot, no more than three, or in a private driveway, no more than three nights per calendar month, with the written permission of the owner and the tenant. Any vehicle not in those three circumstances is a criminal act. And, of course, that means that, what, was it 200 to 400 vehicles every night, or their occupants are criminals? 100 campsites throughout the country, or throughout the county, actually throughout the city, I would say twice that number throughout the county at least, contain people who are criminals. They lose all protections. If police come in, they can search them at will. They can arrest them. They can confiscate their property. It is clearly second-class citizenship. I mean, there is just no question about it. And I've been angry about this for years, and so have many others. There have been petitions that have successfully circulated that have gotten thousands of signatures, successful in the sense of they got that number of signatures to repeal at least the sleeping ban portions of the camping ordinance. It wouldn't let you shelter yourself, but it would let you sleep, because so vicious is this policy, so determined is the police department and its supporters on city council to have a blank check to deal with homeless people, that they actually made it criminal in 1978 for people to sleep after 11 o'clock at night in a vehicle or outside any structure, not a domicile. That's a house or a hotel. So you fall asleep inside a movie theater, that's criminal behavior. It still is. you fall asleep inside a restaurant, that's criminal behavior. It still is. Now, of course, the police usually have the good sense not to arrest people for it or to ticket people for it, but it has happened. And it wasn't changed by the 1999 amendments that Birdseed Byers, our former mayor, allowed to get through instead of having real changes in the sleeping ban as were promised and expected. We got a lowering of the fine, we got some minor changes. But one change that was not made was that the ridiculous idea that if you fall asleep, for example, on top of your own house, that's illegal too, and people have been ticketed for it. Not recently, it was about 7 or 8 years ago, but it's happened. So you have unreasonable laws, unreasonable council members, and you have a community that is really, I think, upset about this. And you see this really very clearly in the Camp Paradise situation, where a small number of people got together and did what they always did, camped furtively by the riverside on the San Lorenzo River, drinking and drugging for a while. And then they decided, no, we don't want to do this anymore. We want to clean up our act. And also they decided, we also want to invite others to come, and we want to make this into something that we're proud of. So they began to clean up the area. They hauled away trash. They actually bought a generator. They set up a bike shop repairing bikes for free for poor people, and I guess for cost for others. I'm not quite sure what the deal is. I don't want to misstate them. I don't know what their business practices are, but they do that, and they have given away bikes for free. It's kind of the repair side of what I'd hope would be that good yellow bike program, but it never happened. It kind of fell down. The free bikes throughout the city that anybody could use and just leave there, and then the next person could use them. And they set up paths. They asked people using drugs to take their drug habits up the river, down the river, somewhere else. They weren't making judgments about that, but they were just saying, not here, because we're trying to do something else. And people complied, and they established a little community there, and the neighbors were pleased. The neighbors finally could walk their kids down there. The neighbors could use the area. An area the city had not cleaned up in 2 decades, these people hauled 27 tons of trash out of, is what I heard. And then the mayor came down there, and he allegedly came down to look it over and to congratulate them. It turned out later he was investigating a report of violence against a couple, and that thing with the couple turned out to be the couple had, although I haven't talked to the couple in detail about this, and I think they've since left town, that what I hear from others is that they were using drugs, injectable drugs, and that they were asked not to do that there, and they continued to, and they were asked to leave. But they weren't assaulted or hit or hurt in any way. After the mayor came, he saw some marijuana plants. He was shown a WAM card, Women and Men for Medical Marijuana, our only legal association in town, which I've criticized for different reasons, but still better than nothing. And they just asked the plants be kept low profile. The next day, the police came and tore up the plants. The day after, or several days later, Officer Eric Seeley, the Homeless Services Center officer, the only person, position, and action to come out of 9 months and $10,000 of Homeless Issues Task Force recommendations with no homeless input in Seeley's selection or training, came to the camp and said, you're going to have to leave. And there were notices were posted, and they were given a July 1st deadline, and the deeline was, Seeley came back at different times and gave a different deadline. He came back on July 4th and told them that they'd have to pack up and be gone, or they would be that they would get ticketed, and then their property would be confiscated. And all of this to a group of people who were simply doing not just what they had to do to survive, but were trying to improve their lives. I think actually most people outside are trying to improve their lives, just as most of us are trying to improve our lives as best we can under difficult situations and in the midst of the most obscene rent crisis that many of us have seen in many, many a year. Where there's a shelter for less than 40 people in the summer and less than 160 in the winter, or a population of 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people outside. And the community began to respond, because Camp Paradise essentially had to go public because they were told they were going to get kicked out. And then they responded by saying, look, we need your help. We're just trying to live here. We have the support of the local community. They put in a porta potty, which was then removed because and couldn't be replaced, in part because the city apparently, this is what the porta potty services said through a person who tried to fund them. Actually, I think it was Reverend Jeff, who's out there today doing services for those of you who want to check out Camp Paradise. Briefly, that's going to be happening in half an hour, I understand, out at Camp Paradise. And for those of you who don't know how to get there, I'll interrupt my tirade to let you know that. In case you don't already know, you go to Denny's on Ocean Street, and then you go down the street that's to the right of Denny's, Felker Street, to the riverbank, nearly to the riverbank. To the right, you turn upriver. I take a path down under the bridge. It's a dirt path, but quite traversable. Walk under the bridge, and then follow the path about 500 yards. That's been estimated to me. I'm not very good at estimating distances like that. And you'll find Camp Paradise, and it's open, and you're invited. And there's a service there today at 12. And I continue to encourage Camp Paradise to keep its powder dry, so to speak. That doesn't mean to have bazookas and nuclear weapons and rifles and pistols. No, it means, though, to be prepared for backstabbing by the city, for police suddenly to move in and say, okay, we've given you enough time, you have to leave now, you're illegal, because they can do that any time they want. And I've told them the best way, this is my view, to make sure that doesn't happen is to have a clear plan that if they're dismantled, they either will come back again and do it just what they did before, which is what their original thoughts were on it, or to take their tent city down to City Hall and do it there regularly and start rotating so that if one person gets arrested, another person will put up a tent. And I think the community would provide massive support for this kind of behavior if the city were so unwise as to do to this public group what it does every day to people outside elsewhere. The city gets away with this kind of crap the same reason the Nazis got away with their attacks, because they don't get seen when they do it, and the people's cries don't go very far. Well, here's a call. Let's see what we got.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, how are you doing, Robert?
What's happening?
That's my computer making noises for some reason. I'm not real sure right now.
Well, you better do something about that.
I was actually trying to see how to... First of all, I'd like to apologize to that guy who said that not nice things.
Oh, battling Bob LaMonica.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Bob LaMonica, because I really had no place in
you
that.
You really whipped him upside the head there, didn't you?
Yeah, I tried to be as nice as possible, but I just sometimes... But anyway, I don't need to make a left-handed apology out of it. I'll just leave it at that. I'm trying to get hold of you on the computer, and what are your call numbers?
Okay, the number on the computer, or the email address, or the website, I should say, is www.microradio.net/FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz. And I can't vouch for whether this
actually... Microradio.net?
No, microradio.net/FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz. And I can't vouch for how much this works, because I've never done it. But I have gotten calls from as far away as Spokane, Washington on this show, so I think it does work.
Well, I have, when my computer actually wouldn't do it, I could get it on a, I had it on a, what do you call it, a list of media once, but I couldn't connect to it. Now mm-hmm. I just can't remember how to get to that list anymore. That ought to help. Okay,
www.microradio.net/FRSC? Right, www.microradio.net/FRSC.
HTTP.
So any reports for us, Doug, in your wanderings around town in terms of, have you seen any musicians being hauled away by police, or people sitting down being told no, 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 or people with having their signs torn up by Sergeant Butchie Baker, which, you know, they're panhandling signs,
No, not exactly, okay. But they've been getting actually a lot of bad reports on Officer Seeley.
Really? Wait a minute. Now, Seeley was the man who we initially were somewhat concerned about, but then you had some positive things to say about him, and
right.
Now
he's
you're hearing
like,
some...
I think someone told him that he needed to be a police officer again or something. I don't know what's up. But I guess, you know, maybe someone heard he was getting by on the radio okay, and they say, no, you can't do that. You got to be an asshole, man.
Well, what have you heard about the Officer Seeley's latest activities? I mentioned him briefly as a guy who's gotten additional funding, or they funded a position for him supposedly to deal with homeless service center area out there at Coral and River and Highway 1. And I also was, there was some suspicion that he was the man that Becky Johnson reported arrested a couple for. I wasn't quite clear what the arrest was for, but they took their sign. They had a sign by the side of the road near Denny's, I guess it was, on Ocean Street, if I have it right. And they also, he walked 30 feet to get a bottle in a, or a beer can in a paper bag that was far away, and maybe that was a part of it. Again, it's not
clear.
Those
are part of the ones I've been hearing, and I've been hearing, but, you know, that's pretty typical on that. There's no telling, and, you know, Robert, actually that's really common, to have a bottle sitting somewhere else, and one person's out watching, sitting, and he might have observed them. So that's real common. I can just go, oh, yeah, oh, he got busted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one person drinks, and the other person runs a sign. That's a very, very common practice.
Right.
Way. Anyway, and that will lead you right to their hiding place, you know. But I heard things like that. I heard about the one that you even reported about going down to Camp Paradise, and he was doing some things there, like when we got the lawyer on to him and Karen Gillette before, you know, telling you things you can and cannot do, which is, you know, against the law, especially under the color of law. You know, he's wearing a badge and suit and gun, and he's telling you things that you have to do, and actually you don't have to do them. He's really breaking the law, and it's really difficult to ever pin anyone down on that law.
Well, if you can't get a police officer for perjury in court, how less likely are
right.
you to be able to get him for, you know, not telling the truth or not telling the whole truth in a situation? I mean, police officers are allowed to lie and undercover
and be stupid
all
too.
The time, you know.
You know, they're able to be stupid and wrong,
mm-hmm.
and they'll just say, well, they can be stupid and wrong on purpose. And they say, oh, I was wrong. That's how come I took you to jail and kept you there 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I was wrong.
Well, have you heard any more specifics about Officer Seeley? I want to be fair to him. You know, he doesn't have an advocate on the show at the moment. And, you know,
I've been hearing he's been beating a lot of the bushes, giving people tickets, leaving notes on a lot of places and telling people they got to get out. It's like they, you know...
Based on complaints or not based on complaints? Or
I'd say it was a police directive. You know, that's a way of thinking. They don't care about complaints. And I never really, you know, they like to get complaints, and they'll go out and do something if they can. But mainly when they go around hitting everyone in town, it's on a police directive, and they already know where the camps are.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone knows there are hundreds, there are 100 of them, like Camp Paradise, and thousands, one or two people, and 300, 400 in cars, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's really easy to go bother people if the police say, go out and start bothering people.
Have you heard about camps getting ticketed or just getting told to move in the last couple weeks?
Let me see. Maryland's kind of asleep. She was just telling me one the other day, but she's asleep. I can't hear
her. When she wakes up, have her call in.
Okay. Anyway, that's just about it. I have been hearing they've been getting bothered. And you know, what he's doing over and over again. Of course, Pink and Paradise, that's the way they will attack it. It'll just be... All of a sudden, when they get laid back, they're probably training for it right now.
I'm sure. I mean, and what really disturbed me is the last time Camp Paradise did have a police officer in camp, and that was Officer Seeley, and that was, I guess, about 4 or 5 days ago. According to my report, I wasn't there, but I heard it from several people. He walked into camp, and he essentially told them that, you know, they were going to have to leave, and they were violating the camping ordinance, and here's a notice about it, and... By the way, you can contact the Homeless Services Center for shelter services. Here's the number to call, at which point Larry Templeton handed him his cellular phone and said, why don't you call them and see if there's any space? Because as far as we know, we've been getting people coming from the Homeless Services Center that they have no space for and putting them up here in Camp Paradise. So, you know, in response to this, however, what disturbed me was Camp Paradise, which mobilized quite effectively around July 4th and July 5th when there were threats to... And apparently there may have been a real effort by Labor Ready to come in and start taking stuff away and so forth. It wasn't entirely clear, but that was the word on the streets, and that was what the Labor Ready workers said. And they were getting paid $12 an hour, which is unusual for Labor Ready people. And people mobilized for that. They came out in great numbers. There was media, and the media essentially, particularly the cameras, drove them away. That was the view of...
Hazardous pay, they would have said there's like syringes and stuff. stuff possible.
Possibly, and they did end up saying
they're cleaning up the beach too.
And they said they were going up the river and or down the river, not up the river. But apparently, I'd heard that down the river had been done 2 weeks before. So why were they doing it again? I mean, it's hard to know what actually was happening. But what was happening for me was people showed up to fight that or to, you know, just to witness any nonsense by the police.
Channel 46, really.
And Channel 46 did a story on it, and apparently I think that may have turned the trick if they had come to destroy the camp. But last week, when Seeley showed up, they didn't call anybody. They didn't you know, put out the alarm. And I'm concerned that they're beginning to rely again on perhaps an attorney's advice or perhaps their own hopes that, you know, there has been some kind of quiet deal done because, you know, there hasn't been any attacks on the camp lately. Although
I'd have to talk to them. I'd like to know, you know. Yeah. I think they probably figured it out. They're not really very stupid over there.
I'm not calling them stupid.
You know, other than following, you know, a little bit of lawyer's advice, but they're, you know, Larry's a lot smarter than he looks.
Yeah, don't say that.
Him. But yeah, Larry knows what he's doing, it seems like.
With that nose, come on. Just kidding,
Larry. I got some photographs of it. Anyway,
The thing that I'm concerned about is that, you know,
they're going to make a big deal out of it. Like I said, they're probably training on,
you know,
this. They're doing a training operation.
The
they
campers,
love it. They'll go in there just like,
right,
you know, Waco.
Right,
man.
But the campers are not really, they're not activists. I mean, they haven't been protesting the sleeping ban for a decade. They just want to be left alone. And
right.
So it's natural for them to say, look, let's just relax and
they just
do our business.
Kind of came out of the closet, opened the closet door because, you know, it was, because it looked so neat is the interest of it.
Right.
Because it was so clean and a possibility of an example of a good campground, that is what got them all the recognition on both sides.
Right. But I don't think they're going to be able to continue unless the authorities truly believe that going in will have a major price, and the price will be that they will return to City Hall, that they will set up their campsite somewhere else, that there will be a huge stink about it, not just like a one-time tut-tut from supporters.
I don't think they'll ever be able to continue there, but I hope that they can go further along with what they're doing.
Me too.
Anyway, I'll let you go.
Hey, thank you, Doug.
Bye-bye. Thank you, man.
And phone lines are now open. That was Doug, a man who's himself been homeless and has spent a lot of time working on homeless issues and groups as diverse as the Homeless Issues Task Force, or the Homeless Icky Task Force, as I used to call it, but in fact came out with good recommendations that were, of course, all ignored by City Council, and has been keeping an eye on what's been going on at Camp Paradise and also elsewhere in the homeless scene. You, too, can speak on the air. 427-3772 is the number. 427-3772.
Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
What's up, Rob?
Oh, not much. What's
the
going on?
The one and only has returned.
Say again?
The one and only has returned.
Oh, this is that braggadocio newspaper vendor. How are you, sir?
Oh, hell yeah, you know it.
Hey, so you're gonna be selling street spirits, I suppose, till the cows come home, eh?
Well, I need your help with that. Program today.
Well, you're a man who's I think, what's your record on selling street spirits?
I'll say about 100, 150 a
week. And for listeners, street spirit is not a bottled beverage. It is actually a newspaper that has information about homeless activities up and down the coast and how people are being treated. And on the current issue, the July issue of Street Spirit, which costs $1 from a homeless person, you can actually read about Camp Paradise on page 4, and in the next issue, August, there will be a similar article on updates on Camp Paradise. Yeah, well, I would say check me out at the coffee roasting company around 15 to 2 or 2 today. It's my suggestion to you, sir.
Yeah, that's not a problem because I don't have any, but there's something I want to comment about what you were talking about.
Oh, please do.
About the Dawson Lee project.
Mm-hmm.
See what it is. The city found themselves a loophole because it makes more revenue for them in both ways. The project, then putting people on the street with nowhere else to go, that's another way of revenue for the city to give people citations for them to pay.
Well, the Dolphin Lee project is actually, it's not going to house any homeless people. It's going to simply take the people that are currently living in the Dolphin Apartments, the Lee Apartments, and the people who are living in the Rex Court Apartments. It's tough luck for them. They were just evicted by Canfield and told to go on their way. It's going to take those folks and put some of them back into housing in a couple of years in a fancier, better place that's run by Mercy Charities Housing, a huge kind of complex which has child care and will have a community center. It'll have some of the amenities that are so attractive to liberal supporters. But what it won't have is more housing. I mean, it'll have less housing than currently exists, and they're figuring that some people will just go away or take some money and disappear.
Now, what's this deal about Camp Paradise?
Well, you haven't been in town, have you?
I don't know where it is, but I know that that's where you're at.
Well, actually, I'm not at Camp Paradise. I'm in Camp Purgatorio here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. Paradise is a campground, as I mentioned before. It's along the San Lorenzo River. You go to Denny's up Felker Street, which goes down to the river, and then you take a path to the right under the bridge and up the river about 500 yards, and it's a camp. It's a drug-free, clean and sober campground that's been there for, well, probably since last year, but it really became public a couple months ago when Fitzmaurice and then the police came down and threatened to remove it.
Well, when you come down here this afternoon, I have a pal for... Well, actually, matter of fact, it's in the member rights under the Constitution.
Well, I'll talk to you about that unless you want to bring it up now. We can probably talk about it when I see you, and then perhaps you can talk about it on Thursday. We have another show 6 to 8 on Thursday in the evening, as you probably know.
Yeah, we can wait during the week to do that. And I'll give you, as a matter of fact, I'll even give you the website where you can find it.
Well, that's cool, bud. So, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, the website actually is...
I'm sorry?
The website is www.law.cornell.edu/.
And what are we looking for?
You can look up under there for constitution and codes. And that's the one you want to click on.
All right. Well, let's talk more about this. Anything else you want to discuss?
That'll be it for now.
Well, thank you, Bud, and welcome back to Santa Cruz.
And my apologies for the volume variations. That's your hand begins to tremble as you approach old age here. But hey, we've got to carry on. And you can carry on and call in here at 427-3772 if you'd like. That's 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, on this edition, the July 22nd edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides.
I had a training manual. Once I even read it. When it comes to People's Park and food not bombs, forget it. I'm a UC cop. 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 Oh, and the law means nothing to me. Clear to me, time for batting practice. I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop. Cause I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop. And the law means nothing to me. Well, murderers and rapists on the street are fine with me. It's these hippies from the 60s that we can't allow run free. I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop. And the law means nothing to me. Well, these women on the front line, they get me all excited. The party's in the holding cell and I'm always invited. I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop. Well, I don't give
Camp Paradise, a clean and sober homeless encampment on the east levee of the San Lorenzo River in Santa Cruz, California, has been a temporary home for 20 to 30 homeless people of the Santa Cruz area for the past 8 months through the spring and summer of 2001. Despite threats from the Santa Cruz police, the camp continues. All the shelter beds are full, and the anti-homeless sleeping ban is in full effect. These people are independently starting a community of their own. I spoke with Larry Templeton, Camp Paradise spokesperson.
All right, this is Skidmark Bob. It is July 19th, 2001. I'm here with Larry Templeton at the, what do you call it? Camp Paradise. That's right, I knew that. still waking up this morning. So, what's the most recent updates here? I believe Officer Seeley was down here.
2 days ago, Officer Seeley was here saying that he's going to be back issuing tickets. That was 2 days ago. He ain't been back yet. This morning, I heard that they were on the other side of the river. I know they're over there because all the heroin junkies and the dealers are running across to this side. Getting their exits out of here.
So he's basically pushing some of the drug dealers over here.
Back over here, yes.
Camp Paradise.
Yes.
Thanks, Officer Seeley. Yeah. I understand he was hassling some people here, too.
He came in here telling people that they can't be here. And one thing I told Seeley, he told me to stay put at my campsite. Well, I told him, this is all my campsite. And as I kept following him, he says, Mr. Templeton, I'm going to arrest you for following me.
Are you serious?
You know, how can he arrest me for following him? Every tent in this site is mine. Every tent belongs to me. I bought it with my Social Security money, and I don't see how Officer Seeley can go to one of these tents, and this is what he does. He'll come to this tent. Instead of putting his flyer here or putting his flyer here, he unzips a man's tent and slides one of their flyers inside a man's tent. Well, if we do that to somebody's home, if I go to somebody's home and hand them a Camp Paradise flyer in their door while they're not home, I go to jail for breaking and entering.
Trespassing, right.
Well, Officer Seeley needs to be confronted about that because he has unzipped every tent here and went through tents.
What's the notice that he gives? What is it?
The notice says your violation of the camping ban, such and such code.
636.
Yeah, something. And contact the Family Resource Center on Coral Street.
Uh-huh.
They do not know nothing about this flyer. They go, what are we supposed to do?
So you contact them and there's no...
Yeah, contact them for what? What are they supposed to do? So that's something that we're bringing up against them is why? Yeah, he don't bite. This is Max. He don't hurt nobody. That's Max the old hound. He don't hurt nobody. And he'll talk to you, so don't even think he's growling. Yeah, he
does too.
Yeah, he don't hurt no one.
So it's a city... Have you talked to the mayor or any of the council members recently?
A guy named Spike from the organization Friends from Outside, and one of our residents that live on Felker Street, Charles, we went down and talked to the mayor. He told us that he had the city attorney call the police department and tell them, this is not a priority thing. This is not priority. They have other things that's more important than this camp.
Right.
But Seeley still keeps coming, making his threats of taking us to jail.
But he's never ticketed anybody yet.
Not yet, no.
Not for camping? Littering or
no.
Silly stuff?
Nothing like that yet. I see it coming because he keeps coming down here making his threats. I see it coming. And the mayor made a statement with the people that was with us. If you can find a piece of land, bring it to our attention, a city land that can be used for something like this. Well, today I'm going to bring it to their attention. This is a piece of city land. It's proven that they own it. The water has never threatened me since 1984. I've lived on this river.
Uh-huh.
Well, in the winter months, they have the armory. The armory houses about 250 people. Well, that still ain't close enough room. If they could let this be the campground, I would even have people sign waivers if the city is not liable for something if the river does come up. Because we know if the river's going to come up, we got plenty of time to get our stuff out of here.
Right.
but they had one flood, and if they're going to use that to justify their reason to kick us out of here, in 82 there was a flood. 82, every place in the world flooded. Not just Santa Cruz.
Right.
Iowa, the whole city of Des Moines was underwater in 82 and in 89. Well, this river has never threatened us. It's never came up no further than these two trees. You see a group of three trees here.
Yeah.
The two on the back side, the river has never came no higher than that since 1984.
So how many people are here now?
There's about 20... About 20 people here now.
Okay. Okay, I talked to you about, what, 2 weeks ago, I believe, something like that.
Yeah, we were up 30 to 40 people. Those people have traveled on.
There's been no more labor-ready people coming down to...
None.
Okay, since that whole incident.
Exactly. And they told us, I talked to one of the labor-ready guys, he goes, we were coming down there to take that camp down. He goes, they told you we were doing the south. He goes, no, that's what we were told. We were going to come down and clean up the campsite.
Wow. Wow.
So why would the labor-ready guys say what was truly happening, and they're putting it in the newspaper that we're cleaning up the south part of the levee? Well, if they want to hire labor-ready to clean up areas, they better make a big check out to this camp, because we've done 6-7 months worth of work here.
We've done all their work.
Cleaning up trash that they paid $12 an hour for them. Well, we want our pay, too.
Right.
You know, we did their work. if they had it advertised on the paper, well, we did their job. We want paid for it.
So what do you guys need in the way of donations right now? I understand they turned the water off or something?
Yeah, they turned our water off. We need water. Camping gear is a big essential out here.
Okay.
I've been buying it all on my own. I get $712 a month. I've never asked nobody for nothing. I feel like since the government wants to give me that kind of money and that I can't live on it, I might as well make other people comfortable, too.
What about trash bags?
Trash bags.
That's always needed.
We need trash bags, camping gear,
water.
Anything that anybody could think that would help a community survive like what we're doing here, we don't turn down nothing.
Okay.
If they had an old Weber barbecue grill, it don't even have to be a Weber, any kind of a grill, that where I can sit back in this campsite where they would have a grill back here. Right now all they have is a fire pit here.
Mm-hmm.
And the fire pit's lined with rock on the bottom and on around the edges.
Right. And well, safety.
There's no roof fire that we'll ever accomplish here. They're a state park at Henry Cow.
Mm-hmm.
They have fire pits there, but the fire pit is not lined like ours. You're in a forest area there. Well, forest area has a lot of roots. And one thing one of the conservation corps says, you'll have a root fire with an open pit fires. They have the same pit, but it's lined with steel, but the ground is not lined with nothing.
Right.
Our ground is lined with 7 layers of rock. I can dig it out for anybody that would like to sit down here with me and take pictures of how we build our rock garden.
It's fine. This place looks beautiful. You guys definitely made an improvement here.
We take a layer of sand as we dig a hole knee deep. We put a layer of sand, a layer of rock, another layer of sand. There's 7 layers under each fire pit here in this area. So there is no chances of root fires in this area.
Have you had anything like the health department or any other city officials come down?
No, we've had
just the police and
the
city council.
Yeah, the city manager, or whatever they're called, the city managers or something like that.
Uh-huh.
They came down and they took a water test.
Oh, okay.
Right out in front of the camp.
Right out here?
Well, they took one water test.
Uh-huh.
And they said, oh, you're polluting the river.
What?
By all rights, to get the true meaning of pollution, shouldn't they go as far as the river goes to see if there's pollution up there, too? Well, they said, no, we can just estimate it from this little water sample what's in the whole river.
And well, isn't there a Saul's tannery?
Yeah, there's a tannery right across.
With a bunch of chemicals going into the air and who knows where.
Yes. I'll show you that here in a second, but we hired our own environmentalist. And he went to the beginning in Boulder Creek of where this river starts. It's just as polluted there as it is down here.
Really?
A little here, they're finding more chemicals in here that he says we don't know where it's coming from yet. Well, if you want to come with me, I'll show you
this.
Sure. As you're coming down our campsite here, if you can see that there's nothing dead along our side. All the grass in any of our trails are dying. Even right down here close to the river edge, there's no depth here. There's no depth in these banks. Okay.
No trash either like there used to be.
Well, when you come across out here onto our beach area, All right. If you look along the river over there, look at all the dead right along the fence. Right up there, you can see where it's coming. Clear down to the edge of the river there, where it's dying at.
There's some trash, too, I see.
Yeah, there's a lot of trash over there.
Across the river, right.
I asked them, I said, why is all this dead grass along your guys' fence? And one of the guys told me that they sprayed Roundup.
Oh, all around there?
The grass around their fence.
Well, so the folks at Saul's Tannery are doing that?
Yeah. If they put Roundup along their fence, I know it's a federal law because I'm a farmer. You cannot spray no chemicals within 500 feet of a riverbank. That is not no 500 feet for Roundup. If that's Roundup there, before long it's going to come down the whole bank and kill everything, because Roundup keeps growing. Keeps coming as the waters grow. The
chemical doesn't break down?
The chemical does not break down. This year, we have cottonwood that's dying this year. There's one right up there. Last year, it was very green. It was as green as the rest of the trees. Well, there's a dead one. I see another dead top on up here and a big pine tree that's starting to die up on their side of the river.
Uh-huh.
Well, everything on our side of the river, I did not see one dead tree on this side. Anywhere you look, you will not see a dead tree.
Beautiful. I love this beach. It's a nice beach,
this
huh?
beach is our beach. We pulled the leaves out, the grass, like this stuff here. We pulled it out of here where we can have a beach that has no glass, no fire pits on it, like what you have down on the boardwalk.
Right.
This beach here, you can come out here stocking foot, you can kick up dirt, and you are not going to get a piece of glass. You ain't going to get a needle. You ain't going to get no beer bottle in your feet here. You ain't going to step on old boards that was burnt. Pallets that has nails in them. You won't find that on our beach. But what we want to do, we want to open up this whole beach right here for the people in our public, in our area here, that they can come down to our beach. Yeah, you don't want to get in the water because there's a lot of staph infection in this water. If you have an open cut on your foot, you will get staph infection.
It's also good to test for chrome 6. I don't know if you know about that. Chromium, it's what that whole Aaron Brokovich movie was about, and also a local person's kid died in Willits from chromium poisoning and going into the rivers.
Okay, well, this river's probably full of them.
Yeah.
Right here, you don't see no wildlife, you know, in the river.
Yeah. Not too many fish going on.
There's a crawdad claw. That's about the only life you're going to find in this river down here is crawdad claws. If you go on up on the other side of the dam up here, which the tannery is no further than the dam, you go up there and you find some very beautiful crawdads and stuff. Down here, everything's dead. Everything.
Yeah, kind of wonders what chemicals they're using across the way at Saul's Tannery.
From the beginning of that bridge up to that dam, you will not see no fish in here. But you go on down where the water has diluted itself, you will see life. You go on up on the other side of the river, you will see life. In this part of the river, you don't see nothing. You do not see no life down here. We have ducks that come down here, but see, there's a crawdad claw. There's one out there. You know, all you see in this part of the river is death. That's
right.
All you see. So there's a crawdad claw there. Then on out, where'd I see that? Right out there is one.
It could be raccoons eating them. What do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Probably.
You don't see no baby fish in this part of the river.
Right.
Nice.
Wow. Well, I want to thank you for taking this time with me.
Most definitely.
So what's in the works right now? I mean, what's the next move?
We're asking anybody, if you have a piece of land that needs to be cleaned up and you're willing to let a group of people live on it for the price of cleaning it up or even charging us a little rent, we're more than happy to do that.
Okay.
We ain't picky. We just want to be happy. We want to live just like anybody else.
And you got a contact number?
Yes. It's 278-9904. That is my cell phone number now.
Okay.
If they can't reach me on the cell phone...
278-9904. Okay.
If they can't reach me on the cell phone, they can reach me at 458-6020, extension 105. That's our mail room over at the shelter. They're working with me, too. Derek is trying to help. If anybody has any suggestions, if you can't reach me on my cell phone, you can reach me at that number.
Or come down.
Yeah, or more than welcome, come down.
And there's the Highway 1 bridge. It's just past the Highway 1 bridge on the east levee. east bank of the San Lorenzo River. People, it's about what a.
It's
like not even a quarter.
About maybe 100 yards.
100 yards from the bridge. Yeah.
One thing I want to make clear, please don't go to that side of the river. If you go to that side of the river, you will go through what the reporter went through that came down to see what that side was all about. You'll run into a lot of drug traffic. You might be hassled. You might even be robbed.
Okay.
I'm stating, please, don't go to that side and call it Camp Paradise, because this side's Camp Paradise. That side's what you call a bad neighborhood.
Or we'll get Officer Seeley hopping out of the bushes.
Exactly. And arresting you for being under the influence when you ain't.
All right. Well, thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
And this is Skidmark Bob here at Camp Paradise, 96.3 FM.
And a special tip of the hat to Skidmark Bob for that enlightening interview. Recent, too, last Thursday, only 3 days ago. The right side of the river is the Denny's side of the river if you want to go to Camp Paradise. If you're looking to buy heroin and other hardcore drugs, check the other side of the river, but go prepared. I'm not advising any listeners to go out there and purchase illegal drugs. I am advising the state to decriminalize drugs so that you can actually get pure drugs, so that they can be had at 1/100th the cost, and so that we can stop having 50% of our prison space being taken up with victimless crimes. But who listens to me? You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse. Phone lines are open, or phone line is open, 427-3772. So give us a call. We've been talking, of course, about Camp Paradise, Clean and Sober Campground. That is, even as we speak, 10 minutes into religious services. So if you're a person who believes in prayer as well as action, go on down to Camp Paradise and lift up your voices or lower your heads, as the case may be. If you believe in speech, however, and you want to talk, give me a call here at 427-3772. I'm not saying you can't believe in both. We'll accept prayers on the air. We will not censor your prayers, so feel free to call in and pray. Just don't pray on us. Pray with us, so to speak. So, the upcoming City Council agenda for July 22nd, I mentioned, is packed, and it begins, strangely enough, at a very odd time. If you ignore the closed session and you ignore the redevelopment agency, closed is at 9:30 a.m., redevelopment is at 11 a.m., the actual City Council afternoon session, which usually starts at 3, will be starting at 12:30, very early. And that's because there are lots of items on the agenda, or perhaps it's because they want to zip through them very quickly and hope that you won't take any time out. People don't usually take time out anyway to come to the afternoon session. Well, that's where a lot of the business of the city gets done. Public hearings happen in the evening, but a lot of the nuts and bolts stuff, which the public has a right to talk about and discuss, though Fitzmaurice limited me to 30 seconds per item at the last session, while not limiting other speakers, again, a violation of the Brown Act. It's good to, if you're interested in city politics and in some of these things, to come on down and have a look at 809 Center Street. I've mentioned the three redevelopment agency items at 11 o'clock in the morning, which is the final nail in the coffin of affordable housing in Santa Cruz, the Lee property purchase. Without any guarantees to the people who are currently living there, they'll be able to return, any clear, written, mandated guarantees. Also happening on the consent agenda is the a contract for First Alarm Security Services. That's the wannabe cops that run around in their uniforms. So they guess they've been patrolling places like the boardwalk. They were patrolling the metro at one time. They're a sort of a county-wide service that has got kind of a notorious reputation, though I haven't heard a lot of nasty First Alarm stories recently. But they have been chosen as the guardians of our security for City Council adopt the attached resolution. It's for special event security in the amount of $18.50 per hour per guard for regular hours and $24.50 for overtime, and rejecting all other bids. So this, on any special events, you're going to see them First Alarm security guards there, unless you can convince that City Council to adopt another group. How about a mediation service? Instead of having guys with guns or guys with clubs and pepper spray. You get people who know how to mediate. Oh, isn't that what Scott Kennedy used to be talking about before he became a politician, that is? Well, that's something perhaps that someone can bring up if they're showing up at 12:30 at the council meeting. That's an early agenda item. You have to pull it from the consent agenda. Then at, I guess they rejected bids from two other groups. One was Armored Patrol Security from Santa Clara, which was charging more. And I think there was another one, but the there wasn't a lot of people, a lot of security agencies that put in bids. West Cliff Drive Bike Path Widening Project. This is a resolution approving the mitigated negative declaration to widen the bike path on West Cliff Drive. Don't know much about it. I know there has been a lot of concern about the Brommer Broadway bike path connection. I'm not quite sure. I'm hoping that we can get a call from that bicycle lunatic Scott Graham, who scope it out, Scott as I call him, who pedals his way forward when he isn't driving his old jalopy and helping others to drive theirs. An excellent mechanic. Spoke to him yesterday, but I don't know if he's able to attend to the show. He's usually working during the day. And then there's another item coming up, improvement of truck scale facility at the Santa Cruz Resource Recovery. This is number 16. Why do I mention this? Because they are rejecting a bid. And I find this so unusual. Usually on these agendas, you see everything is accepted. But in this case, this item and then the next item, the Mission Street Soundwall Project, were both rejected. And I don't know if I should take any credit for 17. I don't even know if it's a wise idea to accept it or reject it. But this is one of the items I pulled off the agenda and was given 30 seconds to speak on at the last council meeting by Fitzmaurice. And I pointed out that it wasn't that it was a huge expenditure. It was that there was another adjustment being made, another extra cost being added in, and that there was no process by which the citizenry could really understand or see or judge whether the additional costs were required, except to trust the staff. And trusting the staff, I think, is not the best thing to do. They have sort of a vested interest in proceeding with projects that they themselves have previously backed. And we saw in the cost overruns on the police station, which ran to more than twice the cost of the police station, I should say more than the original cost of the police station again, so that I think it started at $5 or $6 million, ended up at $13 million. And you still can't get a straight answer from the city manager for life, Dick Wilson, on that issue. So items 16 and 17 are actually rejected bids on the consent agenda, meaning that the council is actually reconsidering, which I find interesting. The item 27 is authorization of commercial sales, the farmers market issue, giving them a year's permit to operate. And there were issues raised at considerable length last time. I haven't had the time to analyze this item thoroughly, but apparently they met with the farmers market people. What I do notice, however, is when I was at the farmers market a week ago Wednesday, I wasn't there. Well, I guess I was there. Maybe I was there last Wednesday. It was last Wednesday or the Wednesday before. They had the same nasty orange mesh up preventing people from sitting down along unused areas in the farmer's market, the same nasty mesh that stopped people from putting up voter registration tables and other political tables that have been traditional at the farmer's market. There was very little traffic on the sidewalk when I was there. There was no drumming, no music when I was there. I just am afraid that this sanitized police department rubber approved, Parks and Rec approved, David and Leslie Plumley approved. Those are the folks that have the store on the corner there, the chocolate and flower shop, who I'm told, and I haven't spoken to them directly, and if I'm miscrediting them, I apologize here in advance, but I don't like the idea of increased crackdowns at the farmers market because some people don't like the drumming. If people want to, I think the thing to do, as I suggested, was talk to the drummers directly and negotiate with them. That worked very successfully with drummers downtown in 1996. It's the one time I saw Scott Kennedy turn around from his pro-business, anti-civil rights position that he's taken ever since 1991, 2 years after he got into office, or a year after he got into office. And he actually supported non-police solutions, and otherwise he's been this militant backer of the police department. But indeed, drumming was dealt with there by mediation and by discussions, and it can be dealt with again. Just like the marimba, presumably, has been dealt with that way. I haven't heard any updates on the marimba, what's been happening since Sergeant Baker moved in and gave them tickets or threatened to ticket them downtown at an early hour in the evening when they couldn't really have been disturbing people in any reasonable way. Certainly no more than motorcycles roaring through town. Probably less. So that's item 27, the farmer's market. I think we need to demand the farmer's market not discriminate or encourage the police to discriminate against counterculture people, young people, homeless people at the market. And the way to do that, of course, is to start large-scale protests there if they don't respond to reasonable discussions. And I think reasonable discussions are a good idea if they're willing to talk. But my experience, when I tried to talk to Janet, and we played that on the air a couple weeks ago, all she did was simply kept repeating herself, and then she wouldn't answer questions as to whether they were being required to get their permit to engage in these kinds of depredations on homeless people and poor people and counterculture people on the sidewalks, whether it was being required of them. She said, no, that's not what I'm saying. I said, well, then why are you doing it? Well, I don't want to talk to you anymore. You're twisting my words. Right. Well, I think what the real problem is that the entire climate in Santa Cruz is being twisted in a particular direction and has been for a decade, as we've seen the Garden Mall replaced with this sterile ramrod straight cement monstrosity with the little fake trees along the avenue that we have now, as well as the mass privatization that the merchants now have, when they can essentially adopt kiosk kind of squatting territory, take over the area, and then start issuing tickets to people who use the public spaces.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello there, Robert.
Hey there.
How are you?
This sounds like the vicious skid mark, Bob.
That's right.
You're the man who did that crazy CD on Camp Paradise.
Yeah, I did a couple interviews. Thank you for playing that, by the way.
Thank you for doing that.
I just wanted to point out, too, I don't know if you've been downtown to where Hippie Planter.
Uh-huh.
Or whatever, I don't know. People call it that. I don't personally, but
near the New Leaf Market.
Yeah, near New Leaf Market, it's all cordoned off. And what they're doing, I got some on video. I interviewed one of the workers that was there, and there, it's been gated off or cordoned off for the last like week, maybe 2 weeks now. I'm not sure.
Well, they're trying to get all the cooties out of the cement from all those homeless people. You know,
I don't get that, and they're spraying all these chemicals on the sidewalk. And supposedly sealing the sidewalk. And it's just kind of funny how they chose that area right before the farmer's market. They started doing it, I think it was like last Monday, so it's been like a week.
Were you at the farmer's market last week?
I was by. I saw Grant there. He was all wrapped up in that yellow, barrier.
The orange mesh?
The orange mesh, that's right. He was all wrapped up, and he had a metro there, and he was saying, lies, lies. It was pretty funny. He was there the whole time. I was like there at the beginning, and then I came back later, and he was still there.
Well,
standing there.
Well, you know, when I tried to do it, nothing as colorful as what Grant did, but when I disputed with Janet and started talking, Janet is the director of the farmer's market, and began talking to a group of people saying, don't patronize the farmer's market until they give you some straight answers on why they're, you know, allowing increased police harassment and setting up this orange mesh that walls things off that previously had been open to the public, she demanded I leave or else she would call the police. And she did call Sergeant Baker, but Baker wisely kept his distance.
Uh-huh.
Then she followed me around the farmer's market demanding that I not talk to people.
What?
Yes.
A public area?
Well, you know, it's public, but it's rented by the farmer's market, so I guess she felt she had the right to regulate people's speech. But, of course, you can't in an area that's open to the public, not in that way anyway.
Right. I mean, is it a private area or is it a public area? I mean,
well, they can impose some restrictions, but they can't, for example, close it to the public or parts of the public unless there is some specific reason. And I don't think we had this problem out at the homeless services center when Karen Gillette tried to have me barred from the homeless services center. Actually, it was the free meal.
As I should be.
She was, however, caught with her undies down in a certain sense because you can't really tell one person he can't come in and the rest of the public they can unless there's some specific concern, you know, which has, you know, then you can do it. But generally speaking, that's if it's open to the public, it's open to the public. It's the same way you can flyer on, you know, Safeway parking lot even if they don't like it.
Right.
Costco's apparently gives people trouble when they do that, but...
Oh, really?
I'd heard that a couple years ago. I haven't tried it recently. I know they've been moving away vehicles, people sitting there.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. But I just thought I'd point that out about the sidewalks. So they're closing off certain areas. I don't know if they're going to do it to the whole mall or what, but they're spraying these funky-ass chemicals. I have no idea what they are.
Well, you know...
The gentleman I talked to said he was hired by the city to do it, but he didn't have a city... You know, he didn't have the city garb on and the walkie-talkie like all of them do.
And it's still roped off, huh?
Yeah, it's still roped off, at least yesterday when I checked it out.
Well, maybe people can move to the offices of the Downtown Association.
Well, people have to walk into the street to get around it, you know.
Well, perhaps people should simply block off the street and create this plaza that Bruce Bratton has been braying about.
Yeah, that'll never happen.
Unless the people create it, of course.
That'll never happen. It'll never happen. It's just, you know, they want to... they want your dollar. They're going to probably put some kind of, you know, McDonald's or something in there, Burger King or something, eventually. It's destined. They were going to put McDonald's in the Cinema 9, but I think the city council got on that.
By the way, there is an item on the upcoming city council agenda, item 43. That's on the 12:30 session. That's usually the 3 o'clock session, but it'll be the 12:30 session for Downtown Plaza Panel Report. This is a report analyzing the Pacific Avenue between Cooper and Church Streets as the location for a downtown plaza, directing the city manager to prepare a plan in consultation with the downtown business community for establishing the proposed plaza on a trial basis.
Trial.
I think some of these people should be tried immediately, but that's just my view.
Especially Dick Wilson.
Hey, are you talking about city manager for life, Richard Wilson?
You mean the Fuhrer. He's the one that runs the city. People don't understand that. It's like... He's the one that makes all the decisions.
Yeah, but Fuhrer Fitzmaurice sounds so much more onomatopoetic.
Or Fuhrer Robert North?
Hey, you can call me Rough Rider Robert.
Robert for city manager. I gotta go.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that was the irrepressible Skidmark Bob. Perhaps he'll be giving us a few new tunes about what's going on downtown. He did some great music in the mid-90s, but since he's disappeared into parenthood and other... regular 9-to-5 activities, we only hear him occasionally zipping out on free radio. But perhaps he's been doing some new music, some of his Just Kiddin'. I see a Just Kiddin' album here in the studio, part of his infamous band. We have open lines, however, and that's 427-3772, number to call, 427-3772. Even though we did a Camp Paradise update, compliments of Larry Templeton and Skidmark Bob, if there's anything new or people want to call in from camp, and I understand there is a cellular out there now, please give us a call and let us know what's up, 427-3772. And as I mentioned before, or maybe I didn't, Becky Johnson and me have put together an article for the next issue of Street Spirit that maybe, I'm not sure if it's as good as the last one, but it certainly covers the intervening month, and it'll be coming out in August for all you folks eager for news. You know, we don't get to hear it in the Chronicle because the Chronicle reporter, Maura, is her name what? Maria Gaura, is her name? Gauro? I don't know. But anyway, she came down to Camp Paradise, and there were some folks there who didn't like, and they weren't Camp Paradise people, but they were Camp Paradise supporters, didn't like her trashing of homeless people in the safe zones and also trashing of Camp Paradise in the previous Chronicle article, about which I'm still trying to put together a response. So apparently she was so miffed, she didn't write anything about Camp Paradise, which probably was good, because most of what comes out of her pen is kind of vitriolic and acidic and echoes Mike Rotkin and other police officers who are on the scene and so forth. And it's not either accurate or compassionate reporting. Also, the reporter from the Sentinel, what's her name? Maria Markov? It's not Maria, but it's a woman who's done some good reporting around the Camp Paradise. Also seems to have been, perhaps she was annoyed by not being given the celebrity status that Sentinel reporters have come to expect. And she also has not put anything out in Camp Paradise. But I did find the Larry Templeton's column, Sunday column, which I understand was ghostwritten in part by Becky Johnson, though with his cooperation and his approval, was really quite well done, and I think
set the issue pretty well. There's nothing in today's Sunday Sentinel about the issue that I know about. But as I said, letters at the city council, I didn't say this at this show, but I said this before, and I was reading some on the last show, are running, I would say, 7, 8, 9, 10 to 1 in favor, letters and emails, of Camp Paradise, which is really quite a contrast to the safe sleeping zones when they were about 50-50 divided. And so that's really good news. I was talking about what's coming up on the Santa Cruz City Council agenda for Tuesday. It'll be the last council meeting in a month and a half. I think the next one is in September, on September 11th. So this is your last chance to see me arrested at city council meetings if I am foolish enough to go there. And, of course, almost anything I say will be grounds for some pungent comment from Fuhrer Fitzmaurice, who will no doubt regard even those words as being the basis for removing me from the chambers. He said recently that if I use the word Fuhrer, or if I give the Nazi salute, anything of that sort is no longer considered free speech by him. We have a very sensitive mayor here who just doesn't like, and I can't imagine why, his council being called repressive. And to prove it, he'll remove people who make such statements. I think the man is brilliant in that regard. But, hey, there you are. There's a item 28, all this on the consent agenda, which is likely to pass without any discussion unless these items are removed, is budget adjustment for the teen center. They want another $107,500. I am for a teen center. I don't know about the OW approach to it. I think it's being built in OW's property and so forth, and I got concerns about insider dealings and so forth. Though I like the Wired Wash Cafe, where I guess it's going to be going in, if I'm not mistaken, out there right next to Kinko's and the Saturn. But at $107,000 more, that's like an increase in cost of a third. Why? You know, I guess there's a brief explanation that they approximated $342,500, but then the grant application, the lowest bid they received was $415,000, with management costs going over to $450,000, so they need another $107,000. Well, I don't know, you know. There's no public process here. I don't, you know, it's hard to tell what the hell's going on.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
No, not much. What's cooking?
Me, Ernesto.
Oh, Ernesto, ¿qué pasa?
Quiero que hable de Butch.
You want to talk about Bush?
Bush, Bush.
President Bush?
Bush, Bush.
Is this a comedy routine? ¿Es una cosa de comedia o no?
No, del presidente.
Ah, el Führer.
Del presidente de Huanchito.
El jefe.
El jefe de...
El presidente de los Estados Unidos.
Estados Unidos, sí.
El hombre más amorado. I'm talking about the president of the United States, the much-loved president.
Sí, es el presidente porque ya... Ya es el... que ya está dando muchos ese es el más presidente de todo es por de un poder más que va a haber policías nuevos carros de policías.
Momentito, señor, ¿se puede decir otra vez? I'm not understanding all of this. So, you something specific, una cosa que tú quieres decir de señor Bush?
Sí.
¿Qué cosa? What exactly? Run it by me one more time.
Bush is good.
Bush is good.
Yes.
Have you been smoking marijuana again?
Marijuana? Oh, yeah.
¿Has fumado marijuana, señor?
No.
No, okay. Just wondering.
No bueno. Growth. No bueno la marihuana.
Well, marijuana isn't good. Okay.
No good.
Mm-hmm.
No, bueno, marijuana no good. No.
¿Vives en el apartamento Leo Dolphin?
What?
¿Usted?
Aquí vivo. Sí, ¿cómo? Así como.
¿En el apartamento Dolphin o Lee?
Aquí por downtown.
¿Tú vives allá o no?
No.
I was asking if you lived in the Dolphin or Lee apartments, because I wanted to know what you thought of this new Dolphin Lee project. ¿Qué piensas del proyecto Dolphin Lee? ¿Sabes qué pasa?
El Beach Flag?
Sí.
El Beach Flag, el apartamento del Beach Flag, I don't know, el que está pasando que va a haber un sabe la comida de la traila, eso lo van a, I don't know, no sé cómo que van a pasar.
Not sure.
Not sure, I don't know, de la community, I don't know, que van a pasando que va a haber un, eso no, no sé qué.
Not
que,
sure what.
No.
You know, mi problema es que no puedo traducir todo que tú dices de señor Bush, because no, porque no entiendo qué pasa. Entonces, ¿se puede hablar inglés? I'm saying
English,
I can't.
Poquito.
Mm-hmm. I can't translate into Spanish, so perhaps you could speak in English. Go
ahead. Fine in English. Okay, Bush era bueno.
He's good.
He's good. Quiero a ver si va a haber nuevo patrulla, mini patrulla.
Patrulla, ¿qué cosa es patrulla?
Es Department of Police.
You like his police policies?
Yes.
¿Te gusta sus policías de policía?
No, está bien que haya policía en todo el lado de California.
His policies in California.
Yeah. Good policies.
Good policies. I'm not sure what qual policies. No sé what policies
Santa
would those be.
Santa Cruz.
In Santa Cruz.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because I'm not sure what his policies are. I don't think he knew that Santa Cruz existed, but maybe he does.
Yes.
Could be that he's a secret funder for the Fitzmaurice campaign.
Yes.
Could be.
Yes.
Anyway, gracias por su malo.
Okay. Igual una. In English, run.
Run.
Yes.
I'll try to think about that. Thank you very much.